You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by queernessatanycost.com and austrian-legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello everyone and welcome to the 55th episode, Lord of the Scam, of
In Response,
a legacy podcast.
I'm Philipp Klein.
I'm Daniel.
And I'm Peter Plank.
And we're talking about legacy.
Most of the time.
And now, welcome back to the new episode of How to Austrian Breakfast. With your generous host and lucky winner of, well, not winner, but kind of...
You got pretty lucky.
I got pretty lucky in the Four Seasons tournament just 2 weeks ago. And now I'm back here together with you guys. And I had a pretty nice record. But for keeping it a little bit of... not sacred, but to keep it a little bit at the end. We, when Philip and myself were attending the event, we were recording some little snippets between each day. And just to give you a hint, it will come at the end of this episode. We will show you and talk you about what our experiences were and what I meant by, I got pretty lucky at what I did achieve at the tournament. So stay tuned for that and listen definitely at the end of this section or for this podcast.
We will put it after the outro.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, let's see.
It's not enough for a whole episode. So, so if you like that, then just tune in until the whole thing. Yeah.
Exactly. And with that... let's dive into the main topics that we have for this episode after the Four Seasons. We kind of put this away and aside for the moment. What's going on in Legacy at the moment?
That's... I think, actually, I'm sorry to interrupt you here, but I think Legacy is a really big scam.
It's a really big scam, yeah.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of different things going on. And the question is what, and I think what is... something to discuss is definitely not really a breakout deck, but it was pretty successful at the Four Seasons event and it kind of, got a little bit of steam. It is a new version of, I think some people call it, although I really love it, but you just cannot call it that way. People call it... Team America?
No, it's not. It's not Team America. No, definitely not.
It is not Team America. Just to get this out of the way.
100% on your side here. It's not Team America. Although the color combination screams to Team America. Yeah. It has no Tarmogoyf and no Tombstalker.
That's the requirement for Team America. But it is Bug Colors. It is, in all seriousness, it's called Bug Scam. And... it made a little bit of results also online after the event because, Andrea Meguchi went pretty decent in the event and it was originally, I think, like a combinational effort of Max Torsion, True Hero and Andrea Meguchi, I guess. So these kind of three persons, at least from what I know. And it is a pretty nice, solid deck that just wants to scam out all the people.
Yeah, just evoking grief and then reanimating it is something that Reanimator players are doing since Modern Horizons 2 came out. And it's a fairly successful strategy, I gotta admit. It's pretty strong.
It's also basically in a lot of blue-black shadow lists, or was adopted in blue-black shadow like half a year ago, to drop your life total and gain card advantage or card quality over your opponent by discarding two of their best cards. And yeah, it's a really solid strategy. And now to put into an Uro shell is a niche way to play the game.
Yeah, because you can kind of compensate
the card disadvantage
by pitching a black card and griefing, and then later on you just have Uro to kind of recoup and regain the advantage and also the life lost, most importantly, because when you reanimate the grief, losing four life, because this deck also plays a couple of snuff outs most of the time.
Yeah,
as it's still, yeah, you're lacking white, of course, so you don't have access to swords or ending, so you don't have a really, really good version of a removal spell against, say, a Murktide Regent.
Or initiative.
Everything above CMC3 is a problem. Or CMC4, actually, because you have Fatal Push.
Yeah,
that's true.
So you can technically...
You could play Doomblade.
You can play Doomblade.
Or good cards.
I mean, you can customize the removal suit a lot, because there is obviously a combination of, I don't know, Fatal Push, Snuff Out, Shield Reds Addict possible.
The one that does destroy non-legendary creatures.
Cast down,
yeah. Yeah, not really the best.
The thing is, I think an old favorite of yours, like
Go for Your Throat.
Right? Not Go for Your Throat, the discard for two. Hymn to Turok is also a mainstay in the deck.
Usually not four of, but like two.
Two or three of, yeah. And it's nice to see that card coming back.
Yep.
And I think it's a really strong follow-up after the turn one grief, you animate grief. So yeah, nice to see an old staple of the format back in play.
Actually, I gotta admit, the fact that the Grief Reanimate package is putting up, is bringing back black midrange on its own is really nice, and really, I have to say that I love it.
Back colors is very, very, very excellent in my opinion in terms of fair strategies. It's not always this blue white shells. And then some, I don't know, splash colors involved.
Yeah.
It is a nice change.
And it's always with a little bit of creatures on the board and stuff like that. Yeah. And yeah, the color combination is really cool. We saw it only with the splashes for white in like the various check pile lists in the last year or so. So it's really nice going back to these colors. And Andrea Mengucci was like the Buck Delver player.
Mm.
He topated the GP in Bologna, the last one in 2019 with it. So for him, it has to be like a dream come true to play like the color combinations again in a proactive kind of way, which is in this bug scam version.
Actually, what I'm wondering about, the one of the main spicy cards that is included in the list is Witherbloom Command. What do you think about this card? Yeah, most of the time it's a two of. What do you think about this card?
So let us go through the modes. It's two mana for sorcery.
Yeah.
So a black and a green. And it's kind of hard. It says you mill three cards and then
It says target player, mill three cards. Okay. And then you return a land card from your graveyard to your hand.
Okay.
That's one mode. Then you can give one creature -3/-1 until the end of turn.
Okay.
Then you can destroy, I think, a non-land, non-creature, permanent, 2 or less.
Yeah.
Or you can, I think, drain 2 life, I think.
Yeah, drain 2 life, yeah.
And you can choose 2 moves, of course, it's a command.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, it's really mana efficient. I know that they played it in TES back again last year.
Okay.
Yeah, it's... I wish that Thalia and the Deafening Silence.
With one card, the wish.
So that's pretty nice to have. I can see that the mill part is probably one of the strongest here because of Doomsday.
Exactly, you can host Doomsday.
Yeah, and so we have the main deck gable out against Doomsday, which has also splash damage against various X1s.
That is true.
So, and maybe you can also... Okay, it's a sorcery, so...
Yeah, this is one of the...
Oh, yeah, that's kind of hard.
Kind of hard things for me as well, because it's a sorcery. But I think also this kind of mill mode is in that sense strong, because even if you don't play against Doomsday, but you can use it for yourself for like the default mode. And you can, of course, mill Uros, you can mill Greaves, you can mill Wastelands.
These you are can set all yourself index. Up for reanimate Grief.
Exactly, yeah.
With a Brainstorm and the Weatherbloom command.
Exactly. And then, you know, killing, I don't know, minus 3, minus 1 is at least, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it kills a lot of decks. Delvas, Strangwage Channelers, Thalias.
Thalias,
yeah. Veldas.
Spirit of the Labyrinth.
Or destroy a random permanent that is not a creature, or, yeah.
I mean, I was thinking about random permanents lying around, because like from a game one perspective, I don't know that much. I mean, it can kill the Chalice and stuff like that.
That's the most important one.
It can kill the Chromox, a Mox Diamond. So it has some applications for sure, but I see it more like a card that is okay in the main deck, but gets a lot better after sideboarding, and you don't need additional slots from the sideboarding to come in. So I think it's like in game one, it's really good that it's a black card, that it can be pitched for grief, and it has some niche spots where it's good, but in sideboard games it can shine, and it's still for every card that is blue, we say it's also it's pitchable to force, exactly. It's pitchable to grief, so it's a niche card that can do stuff.
Does Bugs game play Force of Vigor on the board?
No, most of the time only like Collector Oof.
Okay.
This is what I saw. And Pernicious Deed.
Deed is also really strong.
Yeah.
Deed is also this is one of the most underrated cards at the moment. It's so insane.
Yeah.
I saw it out of Storm in Bologna, and it's like, well, deal with
it. It kills
deed.
Everything that you care about. It's definitely, yeah. Maybe a I'll really need a strong copy, yeah. sweeper, yeah. And I'm. Because when I look at this kind of deck, I'm also when I would play it, I would definitely fear, I don't know, decks like Death and Taxes or, I don't know, anything that puts a lot of creatures onto the board, because my removals are kind of, yeah, iffy, bad, I don't know.
Mediocre. You trade one for one.
You have Strix, okay, it's okay, but you don't have really that, you know, oomph kind of like threats. Your Uro gets sorted, so I don't know how I would feel against Death and Taxes, but maybe, you know, Pernicious Deed, Plague Engineer can get the job done.
I think it seems like that Pernicious Deed is a key card here in that matchup.
Yeah,
I mean, if they get the Calder rolling, it's pretty much game over.
Exactly,
because it can't deal with the Calder.
But to be fair, I think this deck is also kind of strong because Death and Taxes is not that present at the moment.
The 100% agree. Death and Taxes is definitely on a, how do you say this? It's
a decline.
It's not. It has the lowest point, I think, in the meta share that it had in the last 5 years.
It's a rock bottom deck and doesn't deserve to be played in Legacy. Is that what you wanted to say, Phil?
No, not really. I mean, it certainly has its strong plays, but as I gotta say it here, and I say it, I will die on this hill. Yorion Texas is just dumb.
Yeah, of course, I agree.
I don't want to talk too much about Death and Texas here, but there was a 5-0 list last week of a traditional 60 card Death and Texas list with Phyrexian Revoke and Sarah Avenger.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
How is this possible? What year is it?
Is it 2015 again?
Yeah.
I mean, I still have my world championship, Sarah Avenger. Oh, fuck. Yeah. I'd love to sleep them up.
But yeah, Bugs game seems like a new flavor in the meta game. It's definitely a deck that I think does go back a little bit further with the Teemo Tempo deck. With Raghavan and Ura and stuff like that. It feels a little bit like this shell, but with different card combination and a little bit of a different attack, but it's definitely a tempo shell. Yeah. With Ura again, I don't think they play Dresdons.
No.
Okay. Because like Dresdon is also something that could be nice in this decks, either to evoke the grief without letting him die. I mean, you don't get the discard, but it's still a creature, and then you can play the Uro, so you power out a lot of creature on the board. But
it's possible.
can be something to be evolved or adapted into the sideboard to play like two, because like Doomsday, but you have like the command.
But I really like this idea, because you go turn two, end of turn, dress down, and then you go in your turn, and then you evoke grief, and then you bring then you cast an Uro on this like 9-power on board and fucking deal with it. Yeah,
yeah, it's something that can be adopted. I mean, you need the space for it. It's kind of niche. It has to purposely has to have a purpose to be played in, and yeah, Dresden is, if you go the creature route, most of the time not the real route.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, not every deck is a Dreadnought deck. But yeah, I think we want to collude onto the next topic.
Just
a final word.
Just a final word. Do you think, because the scam package is so compact and you can put it easily into other decks, are there more scam decks coming around?
I didn't see any. We saw, I think, some kind of Rakdos shadow version. Kind of, I think this could be qualifies as kind of a scam deck, because it has the Fury Grief action going on. But other than that, I cannot really think. You know,
do you think it has potential to be included in other decks?
Not personally, I would say not really, because it's still like 8 slot that you have to build into the deck, and you need like, as with Force of Will, like 18 black cards, and black is most of the time a splash color. So you need basically a black threat suit to be played in, or a lot of removal and discard spells to be able to introduce it.
Is that I saw it in a Chunt list, like a Chunt mid-range deck, because Chunt is a deck that really lacks consistency and is clunky AF. And I saw a list a couple of, I don't know, weeks ago that really goes big on this kind of evoke creatures. So Endurance, Grief, you think even Fury, just to have no mana spells kind of to interact with the opponent, even if you have normally a clunky deck, so you don't get tempered out or wastelanded out. So I think this could technically spike a tournament, I don't know. But overall, I think for this kind of evoke decks, you need to have a plan involved to come up or to compensate with the card disadvantage, like Oro, like Widderbloom's Command, like Helm the Turok. You need to have some kind of 2-for-1s involved if you're playing a fair deck. Unless you play a tempo or combo deck, like, for example, the Shadow version that is
just... Or Reanimator.
Or Reanimator, there's... I think these kind of directions you need to go. But, this is kind of the things that I would put Grief in.
Theoretically, you could play it like in the Apprentice deck with, like, Grief, Reanimate Grief... with a Bloom Apprentice, like the combo shell,
because it's
like double discard, so you enable yourself for a combo on turn two
You can reanimate your combo piece, your with a Bloom Apprentice,
and you can reanimate the Grief and stuff like that. So there I can see it, but this is then a dedicated combo shell, and I don't think scam works if you play a really fair game, because it's a combo in a fair deck that doesn't close out the game, basically. Yeah. And you need the combo on turn one, and control or slower games or lesser fast-paced games don't really let the focus in on something that is so small and needs to be mulliganed for, basically. So you hurt your secondary gameplay a lot if you introduce this game package in there.
Okay, perfect. So before we get to the next topic... Folks, prove us wrong. Brew some nice scam decks and 5-0 with them, so that everybody can live this scamming dream.
Absolutely. And post your lists.
For sure.
Most importantly.
We want tag to us see, on Twitter.
Tag us on Twitter.
We want to see Queen Machesa in there, because it can be pitched to Solitude.
Oh my gosh. Stop. I can Fury. Get only so erect.
But yeah.
Next topic.
We are at the one.
The only one.
Is it already opened? No, I'm not pretty sure.
No, The one ring that we were referring to has not been opened, unless we are talking about some I don't know, fake versions.
I mean, we are recording on Monday. This will get out of Friday.
Friday's so previous.
Good luck to everyone opening up collector's booster today.
I'm really sure this goes to some kind of random drafter or, you know, some person who really cracks a lot of boosters, because competitive players usually don't do that.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, the chances that like Star City or another big shop gets it is like astronomically higher than, I mean, not higher than and a random individual, but I think they crack for sure like 15% of collector boost at the start.
So, yeah, will be interesting.
Lord of the Rings. So, do we start with the only one, the one ring?
Yeah.
It's an artifact. It costs 4.
Yeah.
It, when it enters the battlefield, if you had cast it, you gain protection and your permanents gain protection. Only the player itself gains protection from everything until the next turn. It has the ability to tap, then you draw a card, then you get a counter onto that thing, and then you upkeep, you lose X life and X is the amount of counter on the card. So basically it's like,
and you draw X cards also. You first add the counter and then you draw X cards where X is the amount. So you draw the first and one, then two, then three, and then
So it's basically a draw engine, definitely useful in Painter, but we will see if it has other applications.
Towards manifold key.
Towards manifold key. Yeah, the question is this Legacy playable? I think it could be.
You're pretty high on that card, am I
right?
Yeah,
I pre-ordered 4 of them.
So you're pretty high on that card.
I honestly, on 90s MTG, shout outs to that channel, they posted the list of Peter van der Ham, who is also pretty high on this card.
Yeah.
And it involves like a band control version. With Oro, with Narset, with Teferi. And the thing that he's going for himself, he also plays this new Halfling. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, Narset is legendary, Teferi is legendary, the ring is legendary, Uro is legendary, everything is legendary. You can cast everything uncountable.
To clarify, the Halfling is a new green one drop. Exactly. It's a 1/2, it has 2 abilities. The one is attached for a generic mana, and the second one it taps for a mana of any color, but it can only be used for legendary spells. And the spells can't be countered.
Yeah, exactly. And with this shell, basically all the threats, all the planeswalkers are legendary. So everything you cast with the Halfling is uncountable. And then Teferi can bounce back your ring to your hand if you get too many burden counters on it. So you can reset the ring, basically. Then you can recast it. And
you get protection again.
We get protection again. So this is kind of the engine and the deck that is built. I'm a little bit skeptical about the Halfling itself, of course.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you want something like that in a control shell. It is, other than just straight up ramp, and you know, it is oftentimes not the thing you uncountability is most of the time not that you want in like value driven games.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the ramp is nice.
The ramp is nice, of course.
I think the shell that PvDH plays is like, it basically skips the 2-drop stage and goes directly to the 3-drop with like Teferi, Narset and Uro. So you kind of need the 1-drop that accelerates you into the 3-drop slot.
Could be.
Because you would skip the second turn completely.
But then are you playing 8?
I think you should play 6 to 8.
Yeah, that's what I
this
thought right
only
here.
Only played 4.
Yeah,
so just the Halfling.
Yeah, that's in my opinion a little bit too inconsistent to totally omit the 2-drop slot. 6 seems...
No, it's not omitting the 2-drop slot. I think it also has some kind of dress downs and I don't know what.
Okay.
And you know your general blue package of 4, Ponder, Brainstorm, of course. So it's not only 1-drop into 3-drop.
Okay.
That's not the case.
I mean, it's... sorry to interrupt
you. Or libraries, I think, also. I don't know.
Yeah, because there was a deck back in Deathrite Shaman era when I think Reed Duke played this.
Yeah.
It was Bug with Leovold, Trunium Nemesis.
And, yeah, yeah.
Where they played four Deathrite Shaman, four Noble Hierarch, and they just omitted the two drops totally and just went straight for the three drops.
Yeah, yeah. This is not the case here. This is not like a mid-range proactive deck that is just jamming three drops all the time. It is meant to be a control deck with prismatic ending swords and whatnot.
But jamming three drops seems so nice.
Yeah, of course, of course. Of course. But yeah, come back to this ring. It is. I also had pretty nice discussions in Four Seasons with Mark Eric Vogt. Shoutouts to him, by the way. He's also pretty high on the card, and I can see why. I kind of also like the card for the same reasons. And
you need to build a deck a little differently.
You need to build a deck around it. It will be a little bit of a challenge now to incorporate it into one shell. But it definitely, you need to have an engine around it, definitely. And you have to be,
You need a way to bounce the ring so you don't die to it. You need a way to recycle it, to flicker it or something.
Something like this.
So you need a shell. You need some life gains, or Uros are pretty much mandatory.
Uros and the ring. This is kind of the threat package that you want, or wincom package that you want. And then, of course, a lot of blue stuff that is normal. And the question is, of course, what kind of extra little engine piece you want to add to make it work and to really, utilize the ring a lot. And against a certain kind of deck, if it's not like a Thassa's Oracle combo deck, you can just loop it, ideally, against Delvo or whatever, and then just, I cannot win. It is impossible.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the idea.
And it's nice.
You know what could be a really strong contender against the One Ring?
Nazet.
Nazet maybe a little bit slow, but I really like the Orcish Bowmaster.
Orcish Bowmaster, the new card also. A lot of the ring card.
The secret tech against
the building threat and the counter.
Oh wow. Galaxy Brain here from Botsy.
This is actually a card that is pretty hyped, I think. At least in the Legacy community.
You think it's overhyped?
Oh, that's the question.
I think it's overhyped, but it deserves to be hyped. So it's like, I think it's a niche good card from non-blue to disrupt the blue card draw. And Callum Smith, for example, said that he wants to play Bowmaster now in the black-red painter list. So it's like, a good card comes into the battlefield for two. It has splash. It MSs one and pings your opponent. All of your opponents, I think.
No, it's just one target opponent. One to any target.
Then you MS orcs one. And whenever an opponent draws a card, it gets pinged. And you MS orcs one for each of those cards. So it's basically, it creates a big army of orcs, or an orc army, because it's like one token. So it's a threat itself. It disrupts a little bit. It does a little bit of splash damage. So it forces a little bit of an issue for the control of the slower players. So it's like really good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the question is how good.
I think this card is insane.
You think so?
I think this card is insane. It has a price tag. We looked it up, about 35 it's to 40 35 euro.
Going up.
And that's the reason I said it's overhyped.
Probably, but I can't totally see it because it's modern legal.
And it will be huge in Commander.
And just look at Darkseid Extortionist. Darkseid Extortionist is, I think, 50 and upwards or something like that. And that's also 2-drop. So,
could be the case, yeah.
I think the real price driver right here is the Commander community, and it will be a huge card in Commander.
I think it's for like a rare card a little bit too overcosted, and also I think it's a little bit too overhyped, because at 2 mana you have already kind of a really nice draw a card chosen in Fairy Mastermind, and it's kind of medium.
You have Spume of the Labyrinth, you have...
No, like a good one.
Oh my god, we're dunking so hard on Death of Texas right now.
You know, it was so good.
We have Fairy Mastermind, and it is okay, it is good, it's medium, but it's not by far not, the must play card. And I think Orcish Bowmaster is kind of similar.
Yeah, it really depends how good the token is, I would say.
It is a threat, of course, yeah. It can be removed rather easily. Yeah. It grows. Of course, it can grow into a threat, of course. That's for sure.
But you know what's really nice with Baumeister? If you play a deck around it with Echo of Eons and Day's Undoing.
But isn't the payoff, you know, when you Echo or Day's Undoing,
that you have a Narset in play?
Why is the payoff then have a 7/7 and ping for 7 damage? Isn't the payoff then I win the game? Why do you need the Baumeister? I rather have, you know, I'm winning the game now because I have
splash Echo colors and Day's Undoing. Stuff like that.
But it just sounds so great, and then you follow up with another Day's Undoing.
I see it, of course.
You make Echo, you draw a Day's Undoing, and you make another Echo or a Day's Undoing and just kill your opponent right now.
This is the kind of thing that...
and hope your opponent never draws a Force of Will.
Yeah. who needs Force anyway?
I don't think this is a play-around card because this is not a thing that produces like a real game-ending threat. It can be, but it's more like a value kind of thing, in my opinion. Yeah. And therefore, it's not a combo card, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think it's just a niche card that should force your opponent to play suboptimal, because it does a little bit, and it comes into play with another token, so it's basically in itself a 2-for-1 with a little bit of splash damage that... You kind of have to play a little bit of a forward game. You have to play a little bit of tempo to really use the card. Because, like, if you don't really use the card and don't really use the damage that you put on your opponent because you play a slow game, it's kind of hard. But do you know what's nice? When they print counters to the cards, because, like, it comes into play, it's 1/1. If I remember correctly, in the Masters of Orchids, it's a 1/1. And they printed a card that kills all the 1/1s. It's called Cast Into the Fire.
it was a really nice transition right here. Yeah. Cast Into the Fire is an instant, a red instant for 1 and a red. It says...
It deals, I think, 1 damage to up to 2 creatures.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it can kills
kill
2 creatures.
Baumeister and the orcs. And the second mode is probably the real bringer right here. Mm. It's Exile Target Artifact.
This is a new thing. I think Red has never had an exciling artifact effect before.
And if they did, I mean, it's certainly overcost so that's 4 or something.
Yeah. In that sense, it's really okay. I'm not sure
Exile Target Cauldra.
Yeah, exactly. This is one of the, you know, the prime kind of targets.
Or Exile Target, how's it called? Drossworth Bridge or...
Drossforge Bridge.
Yeah.
But basically it's an Exile Cauldra. It's a new tool that we have now in red decks.
Maybe Exile One Ring at the end.
It's also indestructible.
Dum, dum, dum.
Because it's indestructible.
Yeah. So basically a counter to another
ring
card
here.
So the ring is hated so much. We have the Baumeister and... It's called Into the Fire.
Yeah.
Basically it's a new tool we can play in Blue Red Delva, most likely, because you don't really need it in Jeska and stuff like that. So, yeah, a new sideboard card for Blue Red Delva, because they don't have that much.
It's an option. I wouldn't say it's an auto-include.
No, for sure not.
No, but I think it will be played probably over a braid.
It can be
a
one-off.
Yeah, it depends a little bit. Can be. Because the 3 damage on a creature is also relevant.
Yeah, that's true.
But I see it against elves and stuff like that, so it's
not bad. It depends certainly on the meta.
It has potential,
yeah.
For sure.
I think we are wrapping up our episode here. This time it's a little bit shorter because now we have a huge topic for you. We're talking about the...
4 seasons.
Yeah, after the outro. So... If you like what we are doing, consider following us on our social media channels. It's @response_legacy, pretty much everywhere besides Facebook. And if you want to find me on social media, you can find me at FinnickMTG, PHINDKMTG. Daniel, where can we find you eating your breakfast?
In most Vienna cafes that you can imagine. Sometimes on Twitter, also, I'm sharing my breakfast pictures, and it's @FlyingDelver there. And Peter, where we can find you?
You can find me on Twitter. It's at unicornlord, but the O in the Lord is a zero. And consider supporting us on Patreon. And now let's get into the nitty-gritty with...
This was In Response, a Legacy Podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the second edition of
In Response, a Roadcast.
I'm Philipp Klein.
I am Daniel.
And we're on our way. Actually, we are already here at Four Seasons Springs in Bologna. We've arrived at our hotel, I think 1 hour ago or something. And we had a really hard day. In my opinion, it was a really hard day. Am I right?
That is... absolutely true. Yeah, we had a hell of a journey. We are awake for at least 12 or 13 hours.
For 14 at the moment. I'm pretty sure, because I was awake.
Or even
at
more, yeah.
4:30.
Yeah, we at 5 in the morning, we, depending on where we started, but we met at the central station at Linz, where we took the train to Bologna. We made two small steps in Austria, and then we took the train directly to Rimini. And
from Innsbruck, yeah.
From Innsbruck, yeah.
And unfortunately, this whole damn train. I tried to say fucking, but yeah. I wanted to say damn, yeah. And oh yeah, you can hear everything here because we're sitting on the balcony at the moment, and
yeah. At the hotel, we try to grasp the last kind of sunlight before the sun goes down. It's actually quite relaxing and nice here.
It's pretty beautiful.
For me, it's the first time here in the hotel, because last year in June, we stayed at a separate kind of...
we had an apartment in almost a city center.
Yeah, a private apartment, and then... we realized that this hotel might be a little bit better, especially for the location.
I mean, it got a pool.
Yeah, it's got a really nice pool, that's for sure.
And tomorrow we are certainly trying it out. I mean, I already know the pool because of last year in September.
Yeah.
And this time Daniel also gets to enjoy the pool here. Because tomorrow we are playing in the team trios.
Yes, exactly. This will be our first tournament. This will be a really, really nice first start off with the whole kind of Four Seasons event, let's say. And together with our patron, Gino.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We will be playing the team trios. Gino will be on the modern seat. You, Phil, will be playing Legacy. And myself, I will be trying some Vintage. Actually, the first time that I ever touching any Vintage deck. How do we feel about this? I think this will be very interesting.
Definitely interesting, because, like you said, it's your first time playing Vintage ever. Chino has played Modern, I think, once in last week.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pilot a deck that I've never tried before and have zero repetitions with it. So...
at least one out of three.
At least we have to get carried by Gino in the modern seat. So,
pretty much, yeah.
I don't think this will be a good ending here, but actually, Team Trials is just for fun, so...
exactly, yeah.
We've got the going for us, actually, which is nice.
We met Marc-Erik Vogt on a train trip to Bologna, because he was apparently driving with family also on the same train.
Oh, yeah.
And we briefly talked about the Team Trials, and he also said that his team is kind of... yeah. Not really prepared to say, but they kind of are randomly joined together. I think he just asked around who knows a modern guy and who knows another Vintage guy. I think he knew the Vintage guy.
Yeah.
And
he will be playing Legacy. But it was already a nice experience to meet another familiar guy.
During the travel,
especially. I guess there will be a lot of people also staying here at the hotel because it's the one that is close to the venue.
Yeah, it's about a 10-minute walk to get there.
Really,
so that's
really ideal.
Yeah, it's so easy.
Yeah, if you're around in Europe and you're trying or planning some day to also visit the Four Seasons, the Relais Bellaria Hotel is definitely the hotel to go, I would say. I guess we can all recommend it. All of the Linz guys and also the German guys for sure. And
also some of the UK ones.
Yeah, exactly. They also pretty much all come here. It's almost all, and this weekend's always occupied by these magic folks.
Yeah, I really don't get it why they haven't made a deal or something with the hotel, because they're bringing a lot of business here.
Absolutely.
For 2 to 3 times a year. I wouldn't say 4 times because I think the Italians are staying at different places.
Yeah.
But in the summer months or the warm months, where the people from all over Europe come here, it's there's certainly a lot of magic players in this hotel. So I don't really get it why they haven't made a deal with them yet. But that would be certainly a good thing to look out for in the future.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Especially because it's so nice and very comfortable in general. My first impression is also quite positive, I have to say.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the second time for me now here. I really like it. And I gotta say, oh, fucking mosquito.
Yeah, they're basically everywhere. This is the whole thing. There.
Yeah, because it has rained all the time in the last 3 weeks, I think. And so Italy had a huge flood also, which is drying out right now. And so I don't want to say there are puddles everywhere, but especially the area around Bologna and Ravenna and the Emilia-Romagna was taken really hard by the flood. So yeah, it's unsurprising that there are a lot of mosquitoes around. And as far as I know, I have pretty sweet blood, so they will all stay away from you, Daniel, so don't worry, they will all come to me. No, you're vegan, they don't want your blood.
This could be the case, but from my past experiments, I can say that I also have this impression or experience. They love
then we,
me.
Then we share. We then we share, yeah.
We can share, for sure. I don't know, because they really, really like my blood also. Like in the last couple of in the experience that I have, don't know if this has changed because I'm vegan. I guess not, but if it does change, I'm happy, of course. But yeah, this is something we can cope with, of course.
What is the plan for today?
What is the plan for today? Yeah, this is one I want to mention also. I think we just will gather with the other guys. We are here with, at the moment, 6 people all in all from Linz, and 1/7 person will join.
Probably on Saturday.
Saturday, yeah. We will gather now in the hotel, play a little bit of magic. We want to prepare a little bit, get our brains activated, and have a nice, relaxing, casual evening before we have a nice long, hopefully resting sleep, and then in the morning tomorrow we will prepare ourselves to
you prepare your breakfast.
I will prepare my breakfast. I brought Austrian breakfast. This will be exciting. What did you bring actually for the main events?
For the main event, I will bring my newest iteration of Mardu.
Of course.
Unfortunately, I can't call it Mardu Doretti or Madretti anymore because you, Daniel, have reasoned me into giving up the Dorettis and playing Fable of the Mirror Break. And holy shit, this card is insane.
Yeah, it's just on paper, when you just read the card, it's
pretty mediocre. Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, all the modes aren't really that flashy.
No, yeah.
So this, like I also tweeted out, the ceiling of this card is, in my opinion, in this deck, a lot lower than the Doretti and Genius Iconoclast.
Mm-hmm.
But the floor is so much higher.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of the modes are useful. although they're not really game breaking, they're accumulating value with each mode, and this just brings you so far ahead.
Yeah.
With the red, it's splash. It's like you put it into play, you sacrifice something, you destroy a Murktide, or you make a token and then you get a counter on staff or something. And with the ultimate, you can make three Battleskull tokens or something flashy like that.
Yeah.
Which is pretty nice, actually, in a grinding situation. But it's kind of situational. The flaw is like you get a 1-1 with Defender, which isn't really that great. Yeah, that's the flaw. And the flaw in Fable of the Mirror Breaker is just you get a 2-2, which is infinitely better than a 1-1 with Defender.
Yeah, that is true. It is just something that is kind of acts as a clue for the deck. You know, you're filtering it. There's a lot of synergies with the effects that you have going on. When you think of Goblin Welder, the mana ramp, let's say, and card draw, you're lacking blue. So you need some kind of filtering, and this is the card that certainly can do that for you. To a certain extent.
Yeah, talking about blue, today we made a short Ask Us Anything on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions we got was our favorite color combinations, favorite color rankings, mm-hmm. Like that, yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought about it wasn't really that easy. I mean, the last pick was pretty easy, because for me that's green. I'm really not a green player.
Yeah, I also don't imagine you playing all the match of green.
It's just certainly not my color. Then the second least favorite color is probably blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you like Mardu. So
yeah, I like Mardu.
Can't be then. There are two colors from me.
But it was interesting that it isn't the least favorite color, because I think people would expect that from me. But it's certainly green, because green is like, well, that's just a dumb color for me. I mean, blue has things going for it. But yeah, and then it was pretty hard for the race for the second color. But I went with white on the third place and red on the second place.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really like white, but white is often lacking so much. And I really like red, because it's just, that does just do so much chaos and funny things that you can do. And I mean, favorite color is certainly black, because black can do everything that you want.
Basically, yeah. I agree on the black. I'm a little higher on the blue, of course, also. This is actually my favorite color. but then black is definitely also the second color. My favorite creature of all time, Baleful Strix.
Yes, blue and black, blue, black,
yeah. This is kind of a combination of the two. I'm higher on green than green followed, and then the last two would be then red and then white.
Yeah, because I like Chan, so you can't put white into third place, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. It is difficult. Chan is kind of not the middle portion now of my pie, let's say, but
yeah, because you're
kind of so.
Yeah, because you're more of I wouldn't say myself that I'm not for myself that I'm not competitive oriented, but you're certainly more of a spike than myself, because I'm not the player who gets out of his way to play a better deck if it doesn't make that much fun for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can certainly see you in that seat, that if...
To a certain extent.
Yeah, if there is a better version or a better deck, or your pet deck just isn't good, then you can switch more easily to a more established tier deck.
I have some routes to this, but an example of what this definitely didn't work out was, for example, Doomsday for me.
Yeah.
I'm just not a Doomsday player.
Yeah, I can totally understand it. I mean, when I think about what was my impression, I think it was with Delver, because I'm certainly not a Delver guy. I played it for 2 or 3 months.
And it was good, right?
It was good.
Yeah.
It was insanely good, but... Oh, yeah. That's just the problem that I had. It's just that...
Not just that.
It's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. It's not fun. It's fun to win.
Yeah.
But the way to win... If the way to win isn't fun in itself, then it just doesn't make sense to play it in the first place. So therefore, I'm always playing shitty decks, because at least the way to losing is more fun than winning with a S-tier strategy. So these are the words for today. I think we will record the next segment tomorrow.
Yes.
And we'll see how we fared in the team trials.
Of course.
So let's swing some wizard squares.
Absolutely. See you.
Oh wow, what a day. It's Saturday. We totally missed recording yesterday because it was a little bit busy. And yeah, we played the team trials yesterday to a glorious, glorious... What was our record again?
I went 1-6 in modern games.
Yeah, overall it was 0-3 as a team. Wasn't too glorious. But anyways, yeah, it was. It's a fun format or fun tournament structure in general, I think.
The team trails.
You have a little bit of team spirit. You can communicate. Although I really realized it's very, very stressful, I think. I mean, for me it was, because I
everybody was asking you what to do. Mainly me.
I know, and I really wanted to help, but the problem is I also was trying to think about what I should do with my own deck.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, because I choose a deck of Vintage DPO Storm, and I have never played Vintage before. So based on that, I had two kind of topics to think about, and this was too much.
Yeah,
this was a mistake. I really realized this was an honest mistake. I should have taken, concerning Vintage, an easier deck, maybe Bazaar or some kind of Oath variant, I don't know. Just where you just be proactive, don't need all that much of brain power, and then you can focus on helping teammates or whatever. So, not that best of an experience in that regard, but overall I think I would do it again, but this time a little bit different in terms of deck selection. I don't know what you guys think, but overall I think this is a nice thing that Four Seasons has. It's this team trios, I like it.
So you say next time we'll get a little bit more spiky and play our own decks where we have
I would say so.
Yeah, experience.
Daniel and I talked yesterday, we did the deck, the format distribution wrong. We should have let Daniel play Modern.
Okay.
You stay at Legacy.
Probably, yeah.
And I would play, I don't know, Vintage, some
Bazaar deck.
Some Bazaar or Elves with Shaman and Skullclamp, just for fun.
With Shaman, Skullclamp, and maybe a 4 of Collective.
Yeah, sure.
Would be, I don't want to say good, but would be at least playable.
It would be the plan that our other team had.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
One good Legacy player, one good Modern player, and the Vintage player is also there.
It's also there.
It's also there.
Yeah, because you need two people being good, because you need to win two matches, you know.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I played 8 cast yesterday for the first time, which wasn't also really optimal, I gotta say. Although the strength of the deck probably carried me through this. I went 2-1, and although I haven't had much experience with the deck, the overall feeling of the deck or the overall power level was just strong enough to make up for the lack of experience in my seat in this time. So yeah, if we want to spike it for the next time, we certainly have to do it differently.
Yeah.
But overall, I gotta say, I'm pretty happy with our record, because we got to, it sounds kind of strange, but it was, we dropped in a timely manner.
Mm-hmm. We made the best out of it.
We went to the pool again. We jammed some legacy games. We drank some Aperol Spritz.
That's nice.
And had a nice evening. Then we went out to eat at the Aristopolis restaurant, and it was pretty funny actually. But a nice evening. So I gotta say, if it would have been more bikey like the other team, like the other Austrian team around Andreas, Franz, and Moritz. We would have to play at least 6 more rounds.
Yeah,
get a lot of stress getting to the
restaurant.
It was stress. It would have been very stressful. Okay. And
but they got to drink a liter of beer. That's also something.
But yeah, actually. Here's the thing. We did the planning for the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If we would have also played all the 6 rounds,
it would have been different. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Would have been a problem to get something to eat, because yesterday was the I think the Independence Day of Italy or something.
A national holiday.
It was definitely a national holiday. I don't know which one it was, but mm-hmm. I think it's something like the freedom of the Second World War or something. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of hard to get something to eat, because a lot of places were closed and a lot of places were closing sooner than they are normally. So playing until 9 o'clock when everything closes at 10 or 10:30,
it's difficult.
Is really stressful. Yeah. And so we had at least a chance to reserve a table for us 6.
Yeah.
And make all the planning regarding dinner. So we've got it going for us. It was kind of nice.
Our other team actually made top 8.
So shout out to them.
Great.
Yeah, I think Diana on place 5, I think.
Yeah.
Fourth. They went fourth, okay.
Fifth.
Fifth? Yes. Really?
Fifth
okay.
Place, yes.
Fifth place, but yeah, that's also pretty great.
For this, because there's no knockout games, this is just top 8 and then the split prizes, so any position is perfect.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So what are the plans for today? Today is Saturday, we are playing Legacy Side Event at 15 o'clock. You are playing breakfast again, Daniel?
Yes, exactly. I will bring Austrian breakfast to Italy and see how it goes, I don't know. I have a lot more confidence in that deck, of course, because I played it a bunch as opposed to Vintage, so I'm hoping it goes a little bit better. And yeah, doing some in-between shopping maybe, gotta get those reserve list cards if you can find them very cheaply at the vendors there. They have some nice prices and nice offers. And then see how it goes. Other than that, I guess this is the
plan for today,
The plan for today, yeah. Prior to that, we will go to the pool also.
And jam some games. Yeah, Chino, what are you playing?
That's a big surprise what I'm playing. My elf deck.
Really?
Yes. It's the only thing I can play.
I also think it's pretty good at the meta at the moment.
I really don't know. I don't know the Italian meta, because last time I was here I only saw combo, combo decks, and Philip, you told me yesterday Italians like to play control.
But yeah, Italians
I'm really not sure.
Play chess guy normally.
It's just not
or
my
Pokala, or this is kind of grindy.
Yeah, but
miracle style and whatever.
This because Angelo Cadei made it popular, and he's wiki on MTGO, and he's one of the grandmasters of chess guy control. I mean, I think he also
miracles.
He already plays 4 color because of Minskin Boo, but the playstyle is certainly different than the traditional 4 color control.
It was mentioned also by Marcus Ewald in the last episode of Everyday Eternal. He's also one of the guys that I guess also, and this applies also to Angelo, who want to replicate the feeling of getting to play Miracles again. Which nobody really got to do post the ban of top, but still they wanna go as far as they can, at least.
Yeah.
This is deck.
So I'm playing my Mardu Brew today. It's probably the best Mardu deck I've ever brewed. And I will keep you updated and I'll see how it goes. I'm actually a lot more confident than with 8 cast.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of the power levels, just because of the experience that I've had. And I think I'm not sure. I would be happy if I went even, like 3-3 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because of my last very disastrous results regarding Four Seasons, with one free drop, one free drop, one free drop.
That's a good.
The Phoenix deck last time wasn't all that good actually. So yeah, this time with my brew, it's on me if I go one free drop again.
Yeah, I mean, you also have of course less card selection and a tad lower power level than the average legacy deck, so that's also.
Yeah, that's true.
But if you have your luck on your side, you can definitely spike a tournament. It's possible with a deck like this.
Yeah, I also think so. I mean, I would be happy if I went 3-3. So that's I set the bar low this time.
Yeah.
And I have no expectations, so I can't be let down.
Yeah.
I gotta say, we grab our things and head up to the pool.
Yeah.
Get to the pool. And we'll see how things shake up this time.
Okay, see you.
So it took us a little bit of time to actually record all this because we are now sitting, it's Monday the 12th.
it's 1 week after now, kind of.
Yeah, it was a little bit, pretty much stressful after the side event and then
the main event.
Yeah, the main event.
We had also pretty full evening plans also.
Oh yeah.
So we almost had no time for anything else.
We tried to record, but it was like, oh my gosh, we are so extremely tired and just do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then on the next day it was like, just grab something to eat, have a nice breakfast, and then, oh my gosh, it's so late now, we have to go to the venue. And it was pretty stressful. And then we tried to record on our way home, but then it was so loud everywhere on the train station, we simply couldn't have some minutes in silence to actually record.
But we can
this.
Kind of reflect now a little bit on this amazing, amazing weekend that is the past of us, and we kind of stopped where we were heading directly to the side event on Saturday, which was the first legacy tournament after the Team Trios. We already reflected on those, and yeah, the question is, how did we fare at the side event? Did we crush it all, make it to the, was it actually a top 8? I don't know.
I don't think they really published top 8 or
no,
because they gave out prizes according to score.
Yeah, so there was no top 8.
So there was no top 8, very unfortunate. And we played 5 rounds of Legacy, although we were 185 players. So it was a huge event, actually.
Yeah, it's more kind of similar to the old GP set events where we have just a limited number of rounds disregarding the standings, and just you get payouts for the standings that you reach.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, Daniel, how did you fare on the side event?
Pretty good. I think I started 0-2.
Yeah, pretty good.
I played my breakfast deck, and for me, oftentimes, these side events are very good to be happening before the actual main event, because I can get really into the focus of gameplay.
Yeah.
Especially the first match is really hard for me sometimes when I don't have some games, and you know, you need to get into the playings and the play patterns, and for that, this side event was actually just more like a warm-up for me. In the end, I think I went 1-3. I dropped then in the last round. But yeah, I had a really nice experience because I met a fellow breakfast player, I think in the second to last round, that I kind of interacted with a little bit on the Discord server of the breakfast. So we talked a little bit about the deck, and he crushed me 2-0, so it's good for him. It was, pretty convincing. And this was a nice kind of interaction that I remember. And besides that, I don't know what happened. I think I was just not playing well in regards to the lines that I should be playing, because this breakfast version that I chose, this staff version, does have so many different lines. I could not think about in each situation what line I should take. And I think sideboarding was a little bit off on my side. And therefore, it's definitely on me and also on this kind of missing warm-up for this, why I didn't fare well. Maybe it's just also luck because I got reanimated 2-0 for once, but okay. You cannot make luck an excuse. I'm a firm believer on that.
Have you elaborated on the deck choice?
Peter, you're also here.
Yes. I thought if I had a second option as well, I brought also 8-cast with me. But I figured I never played it at any FNM. I'm a blue player, so it's kind of okay. I like drawing cards, but I'm not sure if I could choose the right line that you have to do with this kind of deck. There's also kind of different lines. There's, oftentimes you have a lot of 8 thought casts or thought monitor or Psy or I don't know, Saga tokens, whatever. It is difficult, and I have so much experience now with this breakfast deck, so that I definitely choose. Okay, I don't care. I'm just going to rerun it. I think I didn't even change a single card in the deck. Yeah.
Is stuff the new hot children on the in the street, or is it the new hot shit that you want to stick with?
Definitely the second one. Absolutely. This stuff version is, in my view, absolutely the best that you can play. If you want to play breakfast, because it works so well with Saga tokens and so well with Foundry, Retrofender Foundry. And this kind of version turns actually both the control versions and the shadow versions, in my opinion, favorable, which is not the case if you play any other version. And let alone for these reasons, I think the staff version is definitely the go-to version. Even if it does not really help with the combo, you know, Stoneforge can get Shuko and whatnot. I don't care.
Shuko, it helps because you can draw cards.
You can draw cards, you can create really another threat. And I honestly, I won one single game just because of Foundry. I just pumped out tokens turn after turn, won once, and just killed my shadow opponent. He couldn't do anything about it. And I think I won one Jeskai control matchup with 3 staffs on the battlefield, and I think on each of them 3 counters or whatever. And I had almost 1/3 of the deck remaining of cards remaining in my deck. It is so insane. But of course, I said it out a lot. Staff is against combo decks. It's just completely useless. But overall, absolutely the go-to version. I would definitely rerun this kind of tournament. Well, I did in the end use it for the main event as well.
Pretty nice. So we're both really, really high on stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff is for you, Peter. It's new hot shit in town. I think we already recorded 2 episodes about stuff with the storyteller.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, we thought about, maybe we can make a 3rd episode about stuff with the storyteller. Well, yeah, stuff with the storyteller is actually insane. It drew me a lot of cards. Speaking about my side event, I played my Mardu Storytime build. I gotta say, the deck choice was really good, at least for the side event. I went 4-2. I gotta look it up. I went 4-2. No.
Yeah, it is,
yeah, you went 4-2.
4-2. So we played 6 rounds, not 5. That was my mistake. We played 6 rounds, and I went 4-2. Started off strong, 2-0. The first match was against Andreas Leopoldseder.
Almost the classic Linz mirror.
Yeah, that's funny. We had our Austrian mirror in the team trios, and then I had my Austrian mirror in the side event. That just hurt that much, but I was pretty lucky. He was on ANT, on Isles of Tendrils, and I won the first game because he bricked. He won the second, and I won the third one due to having a shit ton of hate cards against combo. So this one was really nice. Then I won 2-0 versus Blue Dredge, where he resolved turn 3 Breakthrough and dredged, I think, buff, maybe 35, 36 cards. And he also bricked, I mean, was pretty lucky. He didn't find any Narcomoebas, but he had Hogak, Icarids, Bridge from Belows, Dread Return. He had pretty much everything besides Narcomoebas, so his board was empty. Mm. And I'm the lucky one who has a singleton Soulguide Lantern that I searched in the next turn with the Saga. Wow. So that was game one, and game two was simply won by... I'm not entirely sure, but I think about a turn one Graft Digger's Cage, which is also pretty strong here. Then I went to lose against Blue Red Dragons. That's like a Delver deck without Delver, and a shit ton of removal.
Wow.
They just play 4 Chain Lightning, 4 Lightning Bolt, 4 the Invasion of Tarkir. Which is, it can pretty much kill everything that you want. That was a little bit unfortunate. But, then I went on to against 2-0 versus Black-Red Midrange with Shield Red and Blood Moons out of the sideboard and Pyroblasts. A very, very spicy list. I really like that. Because I'm black player at heart. And... then also, then it was 3-1. And then I got paired versus Blue Red Delver, which was a walk in the park. Like my deck is what it was supposed to do. And then the last round, I lost against Bant Stoneblade. I really didn't expect this deck to see it in the whole weekend. And then I won the first game pretty fast with Stoneforge into Stoneforge. And then I got crushed with True Name Nemesis carrying a cheat day. It's like, what the fuck is happening? What year is it? And game three was actually a pretty nice back and forth. But in the end, it was... I don't really know it here. I think it was... again, a True Name Nemesis with an Uro, which sealed the deal. But went 4-2 for 19th place, which felt really great when I'm playing a brew. So, that was my side event. Afterwards, we went to Mulino Bruciato.
Ah, one of the best restaurants in Bologna.
We are making so much... advertisements for this restaurant.
Not even sponsored.
No, it's insane.
But it should be.
Is it the one where we were at the first?
Yeah.
It's you have
Peter also.
You have to go there. It's like the best, definitely the best Italian food. But I maybe would even say the best food I ever ate.
Yeah,
it's for sure the best pasta that you can eat.
It's always packed, and it's especially packed during Four Seasons over the whole weekend with Magic players. Because it is run by one of the organizers.
It's Banda.
Anda. Shout outs to him. Really great guy. And this food that he serves and with the restaurant.
And the wine. Oh my gosh, the wine was so
everything
insane.
Everything is also very, very affordable. It is very fair priced.
It's
very,
just insane.
Very great. Yeah.
And we went there with the folks from the UK.
Yeah, shout outs to them.
Yeah, and also...
America.
Yeah, America with Joe...
Justin.
With Justin Gennari and Joe House... I don't know his last name.
I don't know. Joe, who has a million dollars worth of cars, basically.
Vintage, yeah.
Or half a million, I don't know.
So shout outs to them. Yeah, that was our Saturday. We went... Did we get drunk? No, not really.
I don't think so.
A little bit. We say damage pizzle in Austria.
Yeah. We don't talk about it.
Okay, so fast forward to Sunday main event. We were pretty... Were we late? No, we really weren't.
Kind of on time, but
yeah.
Yeah, no, nothing special. I think it started a little bit early for our taste.
Yeah, because we were tired. We were pretty tired.
Yeah. I think also, yeah. I was also not too fit, I would say, like not energized was definitely not the case for me. But yeah, what would you gotta do? You gotta play 9 rounds of Legacy.
Oh yeah, we both played the full 9 rounds.
Yeah.
And it was really tiring. I was so extremely exhausted. In the end, I played to a positive record of 5-4, which was my goal, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, I started off really strong with 2-0. Then I went on to the feature match area, where I sadly lost against this extremely strong player, against Malder Drudi, Easy Money Marksman on MTGO. So a very veteran player of Death Shadow. And he played Death Shadow and lost against him, one of my probably best matchups. But yeah, that just sometimes happens, and it's just unfortunate that it wasn't stream. In the end I went 5-4. I learned that Red White Initiative is a really horrible matchup. It's just not, I don't think it's winnable. But I won against 2x 4 color control,
mm-hmm.
won against Death and Texas, against Cephalid Breakfast. And I'm always forgetting one deck, but yeah, the overall record was pretty nice. I went 84th out of 312 players.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, that's probably my best tournament finish with over 250 people. So
it's great accomplishment with a known brew. That is not definitely not like a meta deck or standard deck that you see all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say it was unlucky, but I was 4-2, and then I had 2x the Red-White Initiative matchup,
no.
which I haven't played before. So I was this matchup was totally new to me, and I didn't know the in and outs because nobody is playing Initiative in our local meta. Which is maybe wrong.
Yeah.
Because the deck seems so strong. So I certainly felt my lack of experience here. But yeah, I think 5-4 is nice. And in the end, I had a little bit of time to cheer for you, Daniel. So.
Yeah.
Tell us a story about Staff of Storyteller.
Staff of Storyteller, yes. This was really, really coming out of nowhere. Because I started my kind of match, really, I was really bummed out that actually after the first round, because I drew the first round. I started with a draw, and I said, okay, I could just go to the pool.
We were pretty defeated, yeah.
Yeah. Because I was playing against the Rug midrange deck with main deck Stifles and whatnot. Lots of tempo stuff going on. And he's also playing pretty well. We both played pretty reasonably, but yeah, there was so much interaction. None of us could really finish the game. So in the end, we just drew. No chance. But then I went on, I think, and I faced my first control matchup. Obviously, when you have a draw.
When you have a draw bracket, you face control. Yeah. Who would have fought?
It was a JSK control version, and now stuff really got the shine. It just crushed my opponent. This deck is really strong. It can pump out a couple of tokens and make a saga constructs and then just go to town with them. Or if the opponent can deal with it, you just go on and combo them out. There's nothing they can do. It feels very, very favored. And I think I had three matches against Control. I crushed them all. I also played them once against Death Shadow. And here really also the Staff version shined. And also the Retrofinter Foundry. Because Blue-Black does not really have a removal for artifacts. So The Foundry stayed on the battlefield, even though it's low. It just pumped out tokens. They got themselves pretty low with Fetch Shock, Fosses, whatever. And then, you know, an army of tokens overwhelms the shadow opponent also. And even though if they have a, I don't know, 12-12 shadow, doesn't matter. I lost, I think, against Naya Depths in the middle, kind of third or fourth round. So I was like 3-1-1, I think. This Naya Depth is really challenging, and it was a really, really strong player. It just had an Elvish Reclaimer for Butchukupok active all the time and had all the interactions that he needed. And especially this onboard interaction is something that I cannot deal with very easily because I mostly have counters. Of course, I have swords and stuff like this, but you also have to fear Marid Large all the time. It's pretty fast sometimes, so it's really a little bit of an iffy matchup. So I think I went then on against another Naya Death player. I played against Moritz of our group. I went on to win that match, and then I think I continued with 4-1-1. Then I think it was 5-1-1, 6-1-1. And then...
suddenly, feature match.
At the end, it was... Well, before I went to 6-1-1, at 5-1-1, I faced one of our fellow podcast listeners. This is what I definitely want to mention. I think it was it the Norwegian guys?
I probably think so, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think he could also speak Italian. I'm sorry if you're Italian or not. But he did bring a really nice brew that I want to highlight because it was kind of a blue-black 8-cast deck, kind of without the casts, kind of an artifact deck with Chalices, Karn, and... I don't know, Trick Bind in the main deck, and...
Okay.
God Alive the card.
I don't know. And then he had like a weird card that I never ever had ever seen. It's like a blue creature that's when it enters the battlefield, you bounce all blue creatures your opponent control, and as long as the creature stays on the battlefield, your opponent can't play blue creatures.
That's pretty insane with Painter, am I right?
Just have it on the battlefield. He also has Painter. So,
Peter, it's a deck for you.
Just have it on the battlefield.
Reach out to me, listener. I want to have the deck list.
We can like get the deck list.
It was completely insane. He also had main deck Ley Lines and Helm. Like, I think so, Helm.
Another plus one for me.
Yeah, so it was like, How do you want to beat Breakfast? Yes. This is kind of the deck that he was kind of brewing. I really got to squeeze out a nice win against him, I have to say, because I really had a good sequencing of cards, fortunately for me. So I went on with 6-1-1, but shout out to that. It was really a nice experience. He was a great guy. And then, of course, I was kind of... interfered by Lorenzo Donati, who was, you know, just calling me, and we want to have a picture together with the Breakfast crew, with Niccolo, with Lorenzo and Eric, as we are kind of the Breakfast guys, Austrian,
Italian and Slovakia. Yeah,
exactly. And then he kind of asked me, okay, what actually you're standing? And said, okay, I'm 6-1-1 now. I have contention for top 8, and say, oh nice, I'm gonna put you on stream for the last round directly, let's go. And then also I got the chance to play on stream for the last round. If you have the chance, you definitely should both have a look at Philip's and my stream.
See my flood.
It's very, very great. I think, Phil, I reached your viewership. We didn't talk about it. I think you played pretty well on the stream, I have to say.
I have I thought about it, and there were so many small mistakes that I
said. Some mistakes, yeah, that were made. But I think overall you played pretty well, I have to really say. But I cannot say that for myself. I was really, really stressed out because, you know, I could potentially be top 8. It is on stream. It is the best kind of finish for this game. I played 8 hours, so there were so many mistakes involved. And I played against a really actually well-known player, Alfonso. He's a Spanish.
Sarzoso.
Yeah, he's a Spanish, I think, very, very
strong. From Valencia.
Yeah, vintage player and also very strong legacy player. It was really great to meet him. we had a really strong and interactive matchup. I think it is definitely great showing, but there were a lot of mistakes involved on both sides. In the end, I got the upper hand with stuff, just, you know, creating tokens, it just carries. And then in the end, also Saint Catherine just coming into play and just riding the town. It was a great, great match. And overall, I went 7-1-1. Then, of course, the breakers came to effect.
Bite you in the ass.
Yeah. Of course, as I drew the first round and then had the loss in the middle somewhere, I ended up not making top 8, but at least it was 10th place, which I'm still very proud of.
At least not 9th.
Yeah, that's what I want to say right here. At least not 9th. 10th place is so much better than the 9th place because it doesn't feel that bad.
And the deck is just busted. I definitely, I don't know what I said in the last Camel of version where we talked about the tier list. For me, this is really, really A tier, this deck. I have to rewind, even if I did say it differently.
But in the last, where we talked about the tier list, I think you haven't really get to play the stuff version.
Yeah.
So your experience was with a totally...
Yeah,
it's funny to say that with a totally different shell.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah, you added basically another engine to the deck, and yeah, it shows. It has a lot of grind potential, so you have more game in the long run. You have a little bit more stability with blockers and stuff like that.
And in the end, what I can say is that there's like mixed experiences with the card, and I think the conclusion for myself is that it is good in decks that can support stuff, if we have Saga especially involved, or Ibi Retrofitter, but it is not good as a standalone card.
Yeah.
It is not good in a random control deck.
It's also not good in four-color control.
You need one other card that does something with it. In my experience from watching videos and stuff like that.
Minsk input does not...
It's not enough.
It's not enough.
It's great if you get it rolling.
The problem with Minsk is it does only, most of the time, only does one token.
No. You can put the counters on the hamster, then you get another token and you sacrifice the new token to Legend Rule. So you can get each round a new
counter. No, you don't get stuff. Another...
Yes.
You get another token?
Yes.
Each upkeep, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that works, but it's four mana.
Oh, each your own upkeep.
Yeah, your own upkeep. Yeah, but it's four mana all the time.
It's four mana. It's clunky. It's already, if Minsk and Boo resolved, you're already kind of winning. And prior to that, you know, casting the stuff without anything supporting is just not good.
Yeah, it's way better in a Saga deck. I think stuff is just stuff is a must pair with Saga.
Yeah.
You can't play it without Words of Saga.
Exactly. It's, I think, the best match.
Yeah. Because you drop it on turn two, you drop a Saga on turn two, you make your stuff on turn two, you get into your third turn, you make a token, you put the counter on it. It's just a match made in heaven.
Exactly.
So yeah. Peter, get your stuff.
Yeah, and then I have to try some different shells, like Bosch and Roll with... like Sword of the Meek, but this is a story we tell.
Yeah, for sure.
Later on.
We went back home on Monday, had a nice train trip where I think you played a little bit against Mark Eric Vogt again in the train.
Some nice matches there.
Yeah, I got to play against Johannes Gutbrod.
Mm-hmm.
At least, I think, two matches. Was also a real nice shout out to him.
Yeah.
And I think with this, we can wrap this big ass episode up.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening.
See you in Bologna.
In September.